Welcome back to This Person I Met. My name is Kayla, and I'm the host of this podcast.
I've known Salem for around 2 years now. Our shared trauma of endless marching band rehearsals and similarities with flute led to a quick, close friendship. You'll hear in this interview that it's clear Salem was one of the funniest people I know, and their presence is immediate comfort to all of their friends, including me. Not only do I consider Salem one of my closest friends and flute buddies, I look up to them for advice, like they're the village elder. A few months after we first met and became closer, I came to learn of their more personal struggles, as all friends do with time. Personally, I think that the most beautiful part of a friendship is when your comfortability involves an openness and a mutual understanding that you want to listen and learn, and your closeness makes room to do so. As you'll hear in this interview, Salem is very open about their diagnosis with depression and constant battle with their mental health, which would eventually lead to their hospitalization at the CS Mott psych ward. Their story is a consistent reminder to me that no matter what, you never truly know what somebody is going through, and to always check upon the people that you love. As a quick content warning, this episode will deal with topics regarding mental health.
My name is Salem.
Wait, is this meant to be anonymous? I don't really care. Do you want it to be anonymous?
I don't care either.
Okay, well, my name is Salem, and I'm a senior going into Huron High School right now.
Do you mind, like, elaborating on your passions and interests?
Sure. I, like, play flute, obviously. That's where I know Kayla. But I play flute with Huron bands, and I do a few competitions around the area. I also do mock trial. I have a crochet business, and I also have a podcast that we are collaborating on.
How do you think your friends and family would describe you?
I mean, I think most of them describe me as beautiful, amazing, and gorgeous. But I think, well, I just made Kayla laugh. So I think, like, the one word that most people would describe me as is really funny.
I'm, like, not supposed to laugh during interviews because they're supposed to be, like, serious. But I'll make an exception for you, okay?
I'm a really funny person. You guys should all listen to my podcast with Esme. You'll start laughing and crying at the same time.
Very beautiful. Okay. What are some of your core values or beliefs that shape how you live your life?
There's so many. Wait, okay. I think right now what's been my biggest core belief that I've been really trying to live by is that you will not be happy if you're successful, but you'll be successful if you're happy.
No, period. I need to write that down.
Okay. She's going to write that down and put it on her wall.
No, I need to put it in the caption.
Okay, yeah, I've been really working on trying to not define my happiness by my successes, but my successes by happiness, and just trying to find peace in my life and making sure that everything I do is making me happy either in the moment or in the long run.
Okay, period. Is there a specific event in your life that you would consider led up to that thought?
I think a lot of events in my life, you know, I think thought processes, psychologically and also from my experience, are a summary of your whole life. But I would say the biggest thing that's influenced me this year and just my overall junior year was going to the psych ward.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you were in your life prior to entering the psych ward?
I would say I was in a pretty weird place, I guess. I think, like, I've obviously struggled with mental health issues for most of my life, and I was diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and, like, probably a lot of other stuff that, like, I'm just not going to say because there's too many, but hashtag joking, you know, I'm the comedian. But I think leading into it, it was a really dark spot in my life in the way where I was really stressed out about school, and I was really overwhelmed about everything going on in my life. And my family was in a really tight spot because my parents had just opened their new business. And it was just a really hard time, I guess, for my family and my academic life. And just all of that combined made it really hard for me.
So you'd say it was, like, a gradual buildup?
I'd say it's a gradual buildup for sure, yeah.
Did you go involuntarily?
I did go involuntarily.
Mm-hmm. What was your experience like inside the psych ward?
I went to the Mott's Children's Hospital. I went to the one here at U of M. And I think all of the doctors and psychologists that I work with were super duper sweet. They were all super kind. I'm not going to say that, like, that's the experience of everyone, because I know multiple psych wards that, like, do not treat their patients the same way. I think it was what I needed in that moment. but I'm not going to glamorize it either because it was hard. It was definitely not easy going there, and it wasn't easy my time being there, because I think it's just something about being forced to be in recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, like, recovery is kind of like a job, really, if a J asterisk B, if you think about it, because I think you're constantly doing something, and being in that hospital was like, you were being constantly forced to, like, try to change your mindset and become better.
Yeah. Do you think there were any, like, significant people inside the hospital that helped you?
Yeah. There was one really significant guy. I don't know if I can say his name. You can probably Google that. His name was John, because we didn't call them by their last names because it was the psych ward. But John, he played the guitar. There was something called music therapy while I was in the psych ward. And he actually went to Interlochen, and he went to Interlochen Arts Academy for high school and stuff. But he ended up becoming a psychologist, and I met him there. And I brought my flute to the psych ward to practice because I really love flute. And it was kind of one of my coping mechanisms while I was there, just to give me some normal, some of my normal life somehow while there. It was kind of how, that's what flute was for me. Being able to play flute there made me feel normal for a little bit because I got to do something that I did every single day there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I got to continue doing it while I was there. And during music therapy, John would play, or our music psychologist would play the guitar for us, and we had a lot of duets. I would improvise on flute with him, and it was a really great experience to be able to connect back with my instrument in a way that made me happy. You know, I wasn't doing it for a competition. I wasn't doing it for an audition. I wasn't doing it for any of that. I was just doing it for my own enjoyment. And I think that really changed the way I view flute. And, like, I won my first competitions after that, I think, No, but I did win more competitions after that. And I think it, like, helped change my mindset on flute. Besides that, he was really impactful because we had group therapy sessions where we were talking in a group with our peers. And I remember, like, for one of them, he literally just turns to me and he's like, you have learned helplessness. Like, you think that your situation is helpless, but it's not. You know, like, you're digging yourself into your own grave by saying all of this when it's not true. Because I was feeling really helpless at that point in my life. You know, I was like, my grades are horrible. My family is never home. I'm broke. 5 cents in my bank account. Like, I felt really helpless about my life. And just having him kind of, I guess, snap me out of it. Like, he was like, you're not helpless. Like, there's so much that you can do. And that's really what I needed in that moment.
Yeah. Were there any significant positives or negatives about your stay?
I mean, I think the best positive I got is that I learned how to view life differently.
Yeah.
My perception of life was all about the results before, I think, what I could get out of life, you know? Like, going there, like, taught me to look at life more so as what it is right now. I've really learned to prioritize my own happiness. That's no lie, you know, like, I'm sure maybe people in my life can notice it. I just, if I don't want to do it and it's not going to benefit me in the future by making me happy, then I just won't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the balance that I found for myself, and it works for me, and maybe it doesn't work for everyone. I think, like, the biggest negative was just, it was a really hard process. Like, I feel like it's kind of glamorized, like, going to the psych ward just a little bit, because it's like, oh my god, you don't have to talk to anyone for a week, like, you're just in that hospital. But it's like, it's a hard environment. Like, the best way I can describe it is mental health TikTok, but in person. While it is helpful to be around people who are struggling with the same things that you are, without a doubt, it's also, like, at the same time, it can be a little bit damaging, because, like, something that I've noticed is that for social media, the biggest impact it has on me is not even seeing, like, all of my peers happy. It's, like, also seeing, like, people online that I don't know struggling with the same things as I do, and, like, you kind of build that mentality and it becomes your normal, you know?
Yeah.
When you're exposed to it so much, you just it just becomes so normalized. And that's kind of how it was a little bit in the psych ward, mm-hmm. you know? Like, you're around all these kids who are, like, struggling with the same things you are, and you're all kind of just depressed there, you know?
Like, just, like, depressed together.
Literally, you're all just depressed together. And then, obviously, being able to leave the psych ward, you know, being discharged, for some people that wasn't willingly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people didn't want to be discharged and some people didn't feel like they were ready. And then some people were being forced to stay when they weren't, when they were, like, ready to be discharged and stuff. And that was, like, it was really overwhelming, you know, mm-hmm. seeing, like, all of these people, you know. Like, the psych ward is not as amazing as it seems, but the psych ward that I went to also wasn't as bad as it seemed. Like, all the people there, all the nurses I worked with, all the doctors I worked with, they all genuinely cared about my health. It just, it was hard because you see all these people struggling as well, and I guess you kind of internalize it.
Mm-hmm. So, like, seeing, like, the romanticized view of, like, mental illness on social media, do you think that it's, like, ultimately, like, damaging to other people?
I think so, for sure. I mean, I do believe that mental health should not be stigmatized 100%. But I'm also not going to sit here and be, like, cutting yourself, having suicidal thoughts, struggling with all these issues. That's not normal. You need to seek help for it,
mm-hmm.
you know? We don't stigmatize cancer or mm-hmm. any of those other physical illnesses, but we also don't sit at home after we're diagnosed with cancer and we're like, we're just not going to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the largest issue with mental health today, is that it's not even just destigmatized. It's normalized to the point where people don't want to get help for it.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the thing for me, you know. I'm on medication for my mental illness, and I have for a while, but I only started in the middle of my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
I had been so adamant with my therapist, even though she wanted me to get on medication earlier, I was like, I don't want to be on medication. I don't want to be on medication for yeah. the rest of my life. And leading into the psych ward, I actually stopped taking my meds. Don't do that. I stopped taking my meds because I didn't want to be stuck on a pill that was supposed to make me happy yeah. for the rest of my life. I didn't want to depend on something like that. And that's what I mean by, like, depression and anxiety are normalized, not mm-hmm. necessarily destigmatized, because no one is meant to seek treatment for it. And that's sad for me, because, like, you should. You need help, and you mm-hmm. you are the only person that is going to be able to reach out for it. You have to do it.
I feel like seeing people online and, like, in person just being happy, like, 24/7, mm-hmm. and, like, yeah, they have mental illness, but they're still happy somehow. It's, like, how sometimes I feel like our generation is just like, how am I supposed to be happy? Like, I don't feel like that. Like, what
exactly.
am I supposed to
do? And I also think it's because, like, you never really know what's going on with a person, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, the one word that I think most people would describe me as is a very funny person from everyone around me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think my mental health is something I've struggled with for so long, and most people don't really know the in-depth version of it,
mm-hmm.
because that's just not the version of myself that I want to show, you know? Like, it's a really vulnerable state to be able to admit that, like, you need to seek help.
Yeah.
It feels so normalized that, like, when you say that you have depression or anxiety, it's almost, like, kind of a joke. You know what I mean?
Like, people, I've talked to people and they're like, yeah, I got diagnosed with anxiety. And then people around them act like it's not, like, some sort of big deal when it's actually, like, a diagnosis. Like, it's a mental illness.
It's a mental illness, and, like, they need to seek help for that. Like, and I don't know. I just think it's interesting because, like, no one would react like that if you said that you were diagnosed with some physical illness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if I walked into a room and I was like, I have cancer, everyone would be like, oh my God, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's just not the reaction it is for depression and anxiety, which is, like, for me, that's not destigmatization.
Yeah.
That's just it becoming so normalized to the point that it's bad.
So do you think that hospitalization was ultimately good for your mental health?
I think it was ultimately good for my mental health. It's a personal experience for everyone, and the way the psych ward works is different between each hospital. For me, overall, the impact it had on me was positive. But I also am going to say that the psych ward should always be your last resort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I hit rock bottom in my life, and I hope that I don't have to go there again. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, The psych ward should be your last resort. That should not be the first form of treatment that you look towards. Find a therapist. Find a psychiatrist. Find other forms of treatment first. Like, there's inpatient programs, which is what I went to, which means that you're living in the hospital, you're sleeping there. But there's also outpatient programs, which means that you're only going through the day and then you get to go back home or you get to go to school and stuff. Like, it's a last resort in the sense where, like, you should seek other treatments first. Don't let it fester to the point where you're going to be sent to the hospital. Because while the overall impact was positive, I'm not going to sit here and glamorize it. Like, part of you also doesn't forget that experience, you know? You're never going to forget it. And sometimes I feel like I can't forgive myself because I put myself in that situation, you know? I let it get that bad for myself to the point where I was such a hazard and danger to myself that, like, I had to be constantly, like, observed 24/7. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, if you don't know, they have to check on you every 15 minutes. I was, like, in the shower and someone was like, Salem, where are you? And I was like, I'm showering. Some patients had to have their doors open all the time. You know, like, you don't get privacy there. That's just the truth of it, you know? And, like, it's not to glamorize it. The impact it's had on my life was more positive than it was negative. But, like, you just don't forget it.
Do you feel like that was kind of, like, dehumanizing, like, the way that you weren't allowed any privacy? Or was it, like, for the better?
I think it depends on the way it is for you. For me, it didn't necessarily feel dehumanizing because we are all children. We are all minors. Legally, they are obligated to be seeing us every 15 minutes. But also, I was sent to the psych ward for a reason. And it's because I was considered a danger to myself. And I think because I also went there voluntarily, I know not everyone does, that I was able to look at it from that objective point of view. You know, these people are doing their jobs and they're trying to care about you. But also, I think, like, parts of it were dehumanizing. We weren't let outside of the unit, you know, and you were only let outside of the unit if you were considered on good enough behavior, you know, to go outside for a little bit. And the worst part was I could see Huron High School, I could see my school, my place of torture from my hospital window. Like, it was not good, you know, and, like, it almost feels a bit lonely there, too, in that sense, because even though you're being constantly watched, you don't know any of these people. None of these people are your family or friends. It feels dehumanizing in that sense, where, like, you don't really have human interaction. You have human, like, seeing. You see humans, but you don't get to interact with them, really. Yeah. And that was the part that felt the most dehumanizing to me. I felt really lonely while I was in the hospital. I will say that.
Yeah, I know of a similar experience from someone I know that was also hospitalized for a different reason. They said felt like nobody trusted her. And she felt like she didn't know why she was there because she thought she was fine. Which is a different reason for why you went. Because you went voluntarily and she went involuntarily. So seeing her experience and seeing your experience, it just feels like, I feel like mental health. Like, you know, do you remember in 2020 when everyone was, like, when mental health was, like, completely free to be talked about? Like, everyone was, like, opening up. And then jumping back to 2025, it feels like nobody's talking about it anymore. Like, everyone, like, hates on, like, depression, anxiety, or, like, makes fun of the people that, like, have it. And it's, like, we're going back to this time where mental health is so stigmatized. So people don't even know that they're sick. And when they do know, it feels like just guilt. Like, just straight up guilt, like, eating at them. And that's just, like, very, I don't know, demoralizing, I guess.
I agree. I think I understand where that where that's coming from, because, like, they literally don't trust you, you know? Like, you're not allowed to have, like, they are constantly doing room checks to make sure there's nothing in your room that, like, you could harm yourself with, you know? You don't get your phones or anything like that. We weren't even given mechanical pencils. Like, we weren't allowed to have mechanical pencils. We only were allowed to have number two pencils.
Were you allowed to, like, go to the bathroom by yourself?
Yes. Okay, well, they're not gonna, well, actually, some people weren't.
Like, the person I know wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, some people weren't allowed to go to the bathroom by themselves. It's different from each patient. I was allowed to go to the bathroom by myself. Some people weren't allowed to shower by themselves. Like, it's also, like, the meal intake. They have to make sure you eat. And, like, it's a bit, like, horrible when, like, you're eating and, like, they have to, like, look at your food before you can leave. Like, you have to eat a certain amount before you're allowed to, like, go.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's anything wrong with, like, the mental health or, like, the, let's say, the healthcare system?
For sure. I think there's so much wrong with the healthcare system, especially when it comes to mental health, because I think the medication, firstly, that we're giving people, it needs to be more carefully studied and discovered, is my opinion on it. I think we still don't really know it, and we shouldn't just be pumping drugs into children without really knowing what's going on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think that the hospital that I went to, the Mott's Children Hospital, hashtag love you guys, I think they were a great psych ward. I think a lot of them really did care. It's, like, one of the best programs, but that's not the same everywhere, mm-hmm. you know? And, like, we need to create a system where we're listening to patients as well as professionals, I think is the thing for me.
I think, like, the people who say, I don't take medication, I need what's natural for my body, like, I understand where they're coming from. I think, to some extent, it's okay to say, no, I don't want artificial things put in my body to make me feel better. But also, I do get that professionals should be who you listen to.
Yeah.
So, how do you think you feel sharing your story today?
I think I was really ashamed about it at one point. Like, when I was in the psych ward, no one really knew I was in it. Mm-hmm. I think I told two people in total. It was my cousin and then my flu teacher. LOL. And then obviously, like, my immediate family knew I was there. But no one else really knew. I just kind of disappeared from school for 2 weeks. Because I was really ashamed about it, and I didn't really want anyone to know. But, like, now today, I'm like, whatever. Like, it happened. I don't have any, like, shame about it, I guess, now looking back, because it's, like, made me happier, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I was able to recover better from it, so, like, why should I have any shame about it?
So why did you, like, choose this topic to talk about today out of all the others?
I just think it's an experience that a lot of people don't really like talking about because it's really personal. I hope, like, for any high schoolers that are struggling with mental health that may be listening to this, that they can just not be so harsh on themselves. I think I was really harsh on myself for a while. I was like, why can't I get better? Why can't I be happier? But I hope that, like, anyone who's listening to this doesn't necessarily view me as, like, the final boss, you know, I finally made it to happiness, but more so, like, a testimony that, like, it's a continuous process. Mm-hmm. Like, I still go to therapy, I'm still on medication, and I'm still recovering, you know, but, like, it's not hopeless, and just don't be too harsh on yourself as you are getting better, because you are going to get better.
Do you have any final words for the audience?
Be happy, guys.
Okay, that's great.